at some point I thought that Africa was one country. Like a bit like the America.
Africa was one country, yeah.
Like a bit like America. But then when I came here, I was like, oh yeah. Oh, there's Ghanaians, there's it. So I obviously
Airtime Crime.
So we have a guest. Her name is Mercedes. I don't know, how shall I introduce you?
Just Mercedes is fine.
Mercedes.
No, so Mercedes.
Mercedes. Like, it's like a car, you know, like Mercedes car. Is that how you spell it too?
Yeah.
Mercedes.
Yeah.
So who gave you that name? Like, did you ever ask your parents, like, Mercedes is my car, is it?
No. No? Mercedes, first of all.
No, I mean, it might sound rude, but I'm not trying to offend you.
It's fine. I don't know, actually. I don't know. My mom, I guess, taught. You know, when back in the days when like Michael Jordan was hip and the Jordans, and then everyone was called Jordan, and yeah.
When the car came out, yeah, like my daughter will call Mercedes, because yeah. She probably loved.
Yeah. So I guess it's just like, you know.
How many brothers sisters do you have there? Is your other children's called the other cars as well, like Ford?
Well, it's actually quite funny that you're saying that. But I've got lots of half brothers and sisters.
Okay.
And one of my half sisters that is younger than me, that's from my dad's side, is also called Mercedes.
Wow. Two Mercedes in a family.
imagine
you have a car and it's a Mercedes brand, like, and then you're like, yeah, my car is Mercedes. I'm Mercedes too. It sounds amazing. Right?
No, it's not. I mean, you know, it's just one of them things that I guess it's just a name. In Spain, it's very normal in every.
Like,
any
it's
other
unique
name.
To me. It's oh. unique to me. Yeah. It's probably unique for a majority of us, right? So, I don't know. Like, it's a unique name. Not many people know. It's like a lot of people have a Friday as a name in Africa. But you probably get that Wednesday and Friday, like they have a name called Wednesday
know.
And Friday.
Know.
But anyway, she worked for International Water Association.
Yeah.
You study psychology, right?
Yes. I started a course in a master course in psychology. So, I've just started it last semester, this semester in October. And then, it's a part-time course. So because I work obviously full-time. So,
What makes you go into psychology? Because it's like, because your mental health need a little bit of training, or like, how's your mental health?
I just wanted to say something, but I'm not doing this. I'm not gonna say it. But
go and say it. It's fine. No filter here. You can say whatever you want to me.
Are you sure?
Yes.
It's to analyze people like you.
No, she's going to analyze it.
I'm joking.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
Go on.
No, I think I like the idea of helping people in a time of need, and also to see like where the behavior is coming from. I think to in order to get to know someone or understanding someone's situation, and everyone is coming from different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to. I like the analysis of it all, and of it of people looking at people, how they live, why they're living their life the way they do. Why have they got any psychological issues? So in a way, I kind of like the whole psychoanalysis of a human being. So
interesting.
So yeah, that's kind of the reason why. And also I think because obviously we are in a time where people lose their jobs. And I do also think that in the industry that I'm in at the moment, which is events/program management, it's an industry that it's in a way it's kind of evolving in a way that I don't really like it. As soon as there is something going on, either there is a recession or there is a pandemic now, my industry is just falling apart. So I think I just had to reevaluate where I'm at, which is I've still got the job, but I just need to kind of look at different avenues. So if there's ever a pandemic again and I will lose my job, at least I've got something to fall back on. And this is not in a rush. I'm not in a rush at all. So
okay, that's really interesting. You're very prepared for what's coming ahead. Yeah. A lot of people should be like that. I'm never prepared. I'm never prepared when it comes to that. As you do, as you said, your event planning. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people, like there's a wedding planner, there's a lot of venues has been shut down due to the pandemic. And then as you said, it's dying down.
Yeah, yeah.
What's their solution if they, let's say, I want to have a wedding party, like not my wedding, but I'm not going to marry anytime soon yet. But if people want to have it, what are the solution?
I think virtual events is kind of a big thing at the moment. I personally don't think that's a solution.
Mm-hmm.
For me, a solution is that we should start getting back to normal in a way where you can, if you are in a big crowd, just try to social distance. Also, you know, try to get in a position where you, just maybe not bigger events, just smaller events. So you reduce the, you reduce the infection rate. And I just do not believe in the idea that people should be staying at home, because this is not gonna be the first pandemic. I believe that the way the world is going now and how we live and how many people are on the planet, this is not gonna be the first virus at least in my lifetime that I think I will.
Very interesting. Yeah. You said that, but I believe I was going to ask, how long would this last, like this pandemic?
I don't know, really. I don't know.
Would it ever be the same again?
I do think that people forget about how it was back in the day. So I do think that maybe the legacy will last for a good 1 or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that a few years ago, well, quite 10 years ago or something, there was the Spanish flu, and people forgot about it, but
it lasted for 30 to 40 years if you believe it or not.
I mean, I also don't think that these viruses are going to be completely gone. I just feel that we'll be able to manage in a way that we can live with viruses going around. And I don't think that we will be, I hope we won't be doing this for long. I think maybe another year.
I hope so. You know what? I actually miss traveling. Because before the pandemic happened, mm-hmm. I enjoyed traveling alone, like going to people's houses, meeting people, like strangers, like saying mm-hmm. hello. But now I have to think about, what would they think about me
coming into their house.
To their house and they're saying hello? Would they let me in? Would I have the same experience?
Yeah. What do you think?
I don't think it will ever be the same.
Okay.
Because of how the media portrayed it. Mm-hmm. Even though there's nearly 8 billion people in the world, mm-hmm. there's at mm-hmm. least 1% people die every single day.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what age you're in, mm-hmm. people die. But the way media portrayed it, it made people scared. Like, it made people think about, you're going to die tomorrow, even if you have a virus. Or like, we die every single day.
Yeah.
And even though if it's not in your family, it's someone else's family.
Yeah.
Like, we're born to die.
Yeah.
You get where we come mm-hmm, from. Mm-hmm. So this is my perspective. Like, we shouldn't think about it a lot. We should do what we need to do every single day, what our job is.
Yeah.
And to keep ourselves moving.
Mm-hmm.
This is my perspective.
Yeah, fair enough. I do understand that. I just think I do understand it.
So as you work in a water association, international water, what's the International Water Association do? Like, what are you're involved in this?
So I work as a programs manager. So I don't actually do the organization side of things. I only do the program content. So we are like an association. So we are a membership body. We've got people from all over the world trying to connect with each other. And we bring these people together. So we've got a membership and we've got publications as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have decided that there is the events where we organize them all over the world.
So what do you actually exchange? Would you actually
you exchange knowledge in the water industry. So, you know, if it's thinking about what's going down your drain or how you the water that you tap every day, even getting drink water in certain regions in for example in Africa, you know, how do you make that foundation that we have in Europe, mm-hmm. but then certain people in Africa they don't have any underwater infrastructure to, for example, drain your toilet water, for example. I think that's kind of the engineering side of things. That's what we exchange, and also the sort of knowledge, mm-hmm. and also getting people to connect with each other and talk about certain topics, and also talk about experiences, because that's it. You talk about, especially from those that those engineers that work on the ground and have got experience in Africa, but then it's different than what it is in the UK, for example. Uh-huh. Also, one of the issues that there is in the UK is like the loss of water.
Yeah, so, recently in this area, a leak.
You can hear that on the news every single 5 minutes that there is a leak. And that's a problem because all that water is obviously going. And because these have been laid out for many, many of years, you have to manage that. You have to find, okay, as an engineer, you have to find, okay, where are the loopholes? What can we do? How can we inspect these issues? And and that's kind of what we do. We just bring people together and exchange knowledge. And we also have publications as well, if I don't know if I mentioned that.
Mm.
So yeah, that's what we do.
Like recently that happened in Newham,
yeah.
where the water ran out.
Yeah.
So would it happen in the future? Like the water is the most usage in a human body, like, whatever we do, we need water. The first thing that without water, we cannot live without it.
Yeah.
But I believe in near future, we'll have a massive problem of water.
I don't think we will have a massive problem with water. I think that water is going to be a lot more apparent because we've got a lot more rain. I just think that there's also going to be a lot more dry periods where we don't have any water because it's in the summer it's getting very hot, in the winter
rainy season.
Autumn it's like raining, you know, we don't have nearly every winter we nearly have every autumn we have got a storm, and I think that's kind of a problem. So I don't think we will be lost in water. I think water will always be there. It is just the climate that is need to be regulated in a way that we all as humans can live for many, many more years. And I think that's maybe, that's the biggest issue, climate change.
As I've traveled a few places,
yeah,
I've seen there's a few countries, I don't want to name them.
Yeah.
They are fighting over river, river water, like who's getting river,
yeah,
enough river water. Mm. Like there's few countries. Because of the water,
mm-hmm.
there's an issue, there's a conflict, there's politician issues. I believe due to the water, there might be war in between the country. Do you ever heard of those kind of things?
No, I think this is not something I've heard because this is not something that we as an association are very concerned about. I mean, I've never heard of it, but I believe that water is not an issue. I don't think it's water the issue. I normally feel it's the ground or the resources that may be in the water. For example, gold, silver. If people can win something out of it, this is where normally conflict is coming from because it has to do with money.
Yeah, always.
So, but you know, we don't know. I wouldn't know. It's also not a topic that we discuss. For us, it's more very, very technical. If you would like to hear my personal opinion, that's what I think. But I don't think, yeah.
So what about global warming? So like, I feel like it's not like a secret. Like
no, I mean, global warming is definitely not a secret. I think global warming is part of the process. It's what they are trying to manage, right? So they're trying to manage a water system that has been built back in the days when global warming was maybe was there, but it was very in the beginning stages. But now it's being developed into a more serious issue because we've got the in the north, we've got the ice melting. We got more and more water coming. And
do you believe there's more water coming? Because I believe it, the world is drying up due to the heat increasing. Because if you look at a map in Africa, like there's a back in the day, about 50 years ago, there's a more tree where the Sahara Desert was. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I mean, yeah. Well, there's more water coming. I mean, the ice in on the North Pole is melting, so the ice needs to go somewhere. You know, so it needs to come somewhere. And we even like if you look at sea levels, the sea levels are rising. That's a problem.
My question is, like, humans are running out of water, like natural water to drink, to resources water. That's yeah. what I meant. We are running out of water. This is an issue that we will face in the near future.
I think it's, again, it's back to coming back to that question. It's all to do with the global warming as well. But I also don't think that if you look, we've got lots of water here. It has been raining the whole day. So that water is something that we could use to filter and to kind of get back to like the drinkable water that we need. What the issue is, I think, is the dryness during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you get is that it gets very dry during the summer because we get 40, 45 degrees. And all that, all the food that we are producing needs water as well.
Mm.
And normally they get it out of the, I think it's a pond in English or like the river. But because there's so many dry periods, that water is now difficult. We can't get it from it. So the water needs to come from somewhere else. So I think we will have a problem with water during summertime because it gets hotter and hotter and things are drying out. But during wintertime, we have loads of water. You know, we are even having more water than what we had before. But yeah, yeah, I mean, I'm not an engineer, so I don't know the ins and outs of it. But that's how I personally think of this whole global warming issue.
You are from Dutch.
Holland.
Yeah.
Netherlands.
and where are your family from? Like,
so my family is from a country called Suriname, uh-huh. which is a former colony of the Netherlands. And yeah, I've been. I call myself Suriname, but I'm actually Dutch myself. I've
how many languages do you speak?
Just two.
Two.
I'm not.
I don't know.
I've tried a bit of Arabic. I've tried a bit of Spanish, but I don't want to say that I'm speaking it because. I'm not. I only speak Dutch and English.
What made you move to the UK?
So, like 10 years ago, I had kind of not family, like minor family issues that I just wanted to kind of escape from it all and just live a completely anonymous life and, you know, just being in a completely different city that nobody knows me. And I felt that it was time for me to fly the nest.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of what I did and then how I got to I studied, did my bachelor's, then did the master's, and then I kind of started working.
Why London?
I think London is like, it's not like any other city. It's massive. There's always something to do. Nobody actually knows you. You don't even know who your neighbors are. And I just loved the vibe of London. I don't know. I just had this vision that London is a certain. That London is a certain this amazing city. I never been there before I moved here. And yeah, and I haven't looked back and thought. I did the last 2 years. I've been like, oh, should I stay or should I go? But I decided just kind of to stay because London. If I think back about Rotterdam, it's nice. That's where my family is from, Rotterdam, and it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows each other. You know, it's kind of a very small world. So for me, it's a good, it's just a good escape from what I've got back home. It's just a good, a nice city. I love it.
So you said, I'm going to London because it's popular. Is it something that I want to explore? Is it just like because of your education?
No, I think I wanted something else. Like okay. I came from a background where I was privately schooled. At first,
posh kid. Posh.
I'm not posh. I'm not even slightly posh. But I got from a background where I also felt a bit that I lost touch of the reality.
Uh-huh.
I lost touch of what is actually there to have, you know, to build up my own money and work. And I always worked, but I just because you go into a private school, you also deal with people around you that are very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you want to keep up, especially at the age that I was at private school, which was like 16, 17, 18. And I just felt like I just needed something else. I just needed to break. And also because of the family issues that I had, I thought it was a really great opportunity for me to actually go out. And
did your family had an expectation you to become a doctor or an engineer?
No. My mom, it's actually only my mom. And she didn't have any expectations. I think for her, it was just more, if I wanted to go to uni, she's happy for me to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I finish my education. And that's always been like the main thing. I had to finish my education, and that's what I've done. And I liked it, and you know, it's kind of brought me to where I am now. But yeah, my mom never really had any expectations. I don't think she knows what I've studied.
Oh, that's interesting. My mom don't even know what. She know that I'm like finished as a pilot. She does only know, but she doesn't know what I actually study.
Yeah,
that was pretty interesting to know as well.
It's the same. No, well, my mom is no. She just doesn't know even if I ask her now, she would. I sometimes trick her and say, "Oh, what did I study?" And then she just can't recall. She doesn't know what. She doesn't even know what I'm doing. So
that's crazy. that's good in one side because you don't want to give a burden on her shoulder, because moms are worrying all the time. Like they worry little thing.
Not my mom.
No, your mom.
My mom.
My mom's the opposite. My mom's a worry about me all the time.
When I call her, she's like, "Why are you calling me?
Why? Oh my god! Do you want some money?"
No, she's not. She's not. She's actually a very she's always been a mom that let me do whatever I want to do. When I was young, I was always going out, and you know, I was just able to go to different bars and restaurants. Not that I was partying, but she was leaving me to do my own thing. I was going out for dinner. I was doing, my own thing with friends. I was traveling at a very young age. And my mom was like, "Okay, well, if she wants to do it, as long as she doesn't do anything weird, then I was able to do whatever I want." So in a way, my mom has always kind of...
You have all the freedom.
Yeah, she trusted me in a way where...
Are you the middle child or the last child?
Well, my mom, it's only myself and my brother from my mom's side.
Okay.
And I'm the oldest, so...
Okay. You had all the responsibility in your hand.
No, not at all. I mean, I think I was just a good kid. I was just doing my own thing.
That's all
I
say, that I'm a good kid.
You know, I was like going to school and so I think my mom wasn't just never really that really strict mom that would call me like, "Oh," and you know, even if I would go out, I wasn't also afraid for my mom to pick me up, or for my dad, my stepdad then to pick me up. And it was just all good.
Nice. good. Something that I learned today, not every African families or like South American families are very strict.
No.
We have these kind of stereotypes that all the family have the strict following.
No.
Like we should learn. There's always something to learn from, you know?
Yeah.
Even learning something from you today is an honor. It's an honor. So what is the biggest shift happened since you moved from like Holland to here? What's the biggest difference that you see in London?
In London itself,
from comparing, being a Dutch?
I think I struggled for quite a long time here in London, because obviously you in Holland you can rent a house for £500.
Uh-huh. You've got I don't think you can rent a house for £500
you've
anymore.
You've got a decent house. You've got a garden, you've got like two bedrooms, and you can basically, it may not be city center, but Just maybe in the outskirts, but still cyclable. Like you can still take your bicycle and go to the city center, or you take a train, or like it, or you can get a car. So I think that, like in Holland, I don't say that I was living a luxury life, but at least, you know, mm-hmm. I had my mom's car, I had this and I had that, and here, I haven't got as much as I had before. So, yeah, I think that kind of shift of.
What kind of struggles you face like during your shift from?
One of the things is obviously you live a life where you can just take the car and you go to Amsterdam or you go to Belgium, or even if you live with your mom, you would just be able to save up because you've got a decent salary, even if you don't have a very high level job. And then you come here and you kind of have nothing. You're a fish in a very big pond, you know?
Yeah. I feel you. I'm in small fish in a big pond.
Yeah. So that is kind of, that was my biggest shift, is that I kind of had to go from all to nothing. Really.
What kind of culture shocks do you face? Like what's all your culture that you felt? Like?
I think the biggest culture shock is that I'm very direct. And we Dutch people don't like to be told what to do. And also we just say it for what it is. If you ask me a question, I either say yes or no, or like I give a solid answer that kind of makes you wonder, okay, yeah, okay, she's actually giving me a very clear direction of how she felt about it. But here, if I ask my friend something, she's like, yeah, I like it, yeah.
What's the word? Passive aggressive. People here are very passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, even though one of our interview that we've done, not interview, like the podcast we've done with Costa, he said a similar thing, like we are very passive aggressive here in London. Like we say a certain thing, like we just like, you guys are very direct here. Yeah. We just like try to hold your emotions in, you know?
And for me, it's very unclear. If I ask you a question, if I ask you whether or not my dress looks nice, I'd rather just have you saying, yes, your dress looks nice, or no, it doesn't. But I don't really know what you, even if I ask you, I don't even know what
the answer is. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yes or no, I'm still
I believe from my perspective, I would say British people are like, they just don't want to hurt your feelings.
Yeah, yeah. But there's nothing wrong with hurting someone's feelings. I mean, if you're friends, you should.
Yeah, you should be telling them like, what's right or what's wrong.
People here think too much. They just overthink everything. Yeah. And they're like, because they don't realize that if I said anything that's not yes or no to your question, then this, I'm gonna suffer. Like if you ask me about your dress, if I didn't say yes or no, if I said something else that's not a yes or no, you're not gonna start thinking about a million things. If I just said yes, then you know what. If you said, you know what I'm saying? Now you need to decrypt my message and try to figure out what I was actually trying to say, rather than me just saying it straight up like a three letter word or two letter word. Pick one.
There's some people like just become an like they're like, no, like you hurt my feeling, and then they just, the mood goes off, and the people doesn't really want that.
Yeah.
Even then, when you say, oh yeah, and I put so much time to dress up like this, put makeup on, and then you just rejected it. Obviously, you didn't look nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm straightforward like that. But obviously, the people here.
Yeah, yeah. It is different. Even just generally with work, I'm like, I just want a clear answer. And also, that's also when I go into meetings and I go into like manager mode, I'm a bit like, let's do this and this and this. Like, I'm very direct. If I don't like something, I would just tell you that I don't like it. But here it's just different. So I really had to get used to the whole, also being a lot more diplomatic towards my colleagues and my friends, in a way that I don't offend them, but also they know how direct and honest I am myself. So, I think that's kind of the mess. I mean, for me, that's even now, I'm still getting used to the whole passive aggressiveness.
Tell me, as you said, you're still trying to get used to. What kind of the top three things that you like about London?
I think that I meet people from all over the world.
That's beautiful. I think it's also, for me,
it's kind of getting to know people from different cultures and backgrounds, and you know, knowing their religions and their beliefs. And I think that's kind of why I was very restricted when I was in Holland. Is that, you know, I always had friends that were only Dutch, and then you kind of don't really know, you know, at some point that I sound really stupid, but at some point I thought that Africa was one country. Like a bit like the
Africa was one country, you know.
Like a bit like America. But then when I came here, I was like, oh yeah, oh, there's Ghanaians, there's that. So I obviously I developed my personal look of on how the world is formed when I moved to London. And that's kind of, I think it's also good for myself in terms of my own development and, you know, who I am. And and that is, I think, what that's really beautiful about it, one of your most beautiful things about this country. And then I also like the idea that there's always something on. There's always, you can always go to like a restaurant or a bar, or, you know, there's always something to do, or a comedy club, and there's so many options. It's not like, oh, where should I go and where should I not go, you know, tonight. So I think that's kind of a nice thing as well. And I also think, for me, it's the job opportunities. If I look at my friend circle, and I look at my in the friend circle in the Netherlands, they've been in one job for many, many years, which is fine if that works for you. But if I look at my friends here and I ask, okay.
People say, like, you said a job opportunity, which ring a bell. People, there's a lot of people say, like, the foreigners come to the UK and take our jobs. What do you say on that?
I don't think that way, because I think the foreigners that do come here, they're here to build up a life. They are here to really do well in what they do. There is many from many different cultures and countries that come here and then set up a business, and they're trying to really do well for their family. I do not believe that the foreigners take up the job, because one of the examples is when there was the pandemic and they needed people to help cropping all these letters and carrots and peppers, there was nobody there. Mm-hmm. They didn't have enough people. And there was no British people that knocked on their doors to open. They had to get the people from Eastern Europe to on a bus or something, or on a plane, to do the cropping for them. So I don't feel that that foreigners take job at all whatsoever. I just think that we are a lot more hardworking. And if we come to a country that is not ours, obviously you are here for a purpose. You are here to better your own life and better your family's life. And that's why you're here. So you're going to make the most out of the best life you can live. And I don't know where people come from the idea that foreigners take their job. But I think foreigners bring more money. Because without foreigners, the UK would be nothing.
Yeah, of course.
Pret a Manger wouldn't be around the corner of you, because 90% of people that live, work there are either from Spain, from Belgium, or from the Netherlands, or from anywhere in Europe, from Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Southern Europe. That shop wouldn't be there without foreigners. Yeah. So I don't understand. I think people that say that are very, very uneducated, and I think they like to live on benefits that I, by the way, provide a bit of. I paid my taxes, you know, and I'm doing that.
I believe foreigners are bringing more value to the country than people here. Yeah. I'm not saying people here. I'm saying certain people here.
Yeah.
Like, if you're bringing value to their companies, to their communities, it's like people need those people need those people in the community to help the community grow, to move the country moving, and it's good for our economy.
I have a question.
Go on.
So you were talking about the whole, when you talk about influence here, there was one question that sparked up in mind here. It's about the bikes.
Yeah.
I'm so curious. Why do Dutch people just ride a bike everywhere? I'm so curious.
Well, I don't actually know where it like historically comes from, but I think everything is flat, which makes
that makes sense. Yeah.
Makes it a lot easier for people to go around, and I also think that we are very down to earth. So for us, a car.
Are you really?
Yeah, we are really? We are very down to earth.
Really? Is the Dutch people that are really down to earth? This is a question I want to know. Because when I went to Dutch, people had a screw face. And I was like, wow.
No, that's
a
natural face, no?
Yeah, I mean, no. I don't know if it's natural. But if you go to a restaurant, don't expect hospitality from a Dutch person. They will say, here's your drink. And you take it or you leave it.
I belong in Holland. I actually belong in Holland. I'm so like, it's either yes or it's no. Yeah. There's no between. There's no. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you take. If you don't like it, well, there's a restaurant around the corner that you can get.
Personal, isn't it? Yeah. I do not like your drink. It's not like I don't like you specifically. I just don't like
the hospitality of the Dutch.
Yeah, it's not. And people that come to the Netherlands, they feel like oh, this hospitality, because we all speak English, so we all know. If it really comes down to looking at our details on hospitality and really hustling we are not like that. We are very down to earth. If you don't like it, well, there's a restaurant around the corner that you can get. Like here, you can
Nice. To me, that's actually a very nice way to respond. Like, yeah. I'm saying I don't like your drink. You're saying cool. Instead of saying okay, cool, and then I said no, here's an alternative. Yeah. There's an restaurant. Yeah. They might have something that you might like.
Yeah, and if you don't like this, yeah, that's fine.
There's options. Yeah. That is perfect. I want to go there. I want to live there.
Yeah, so we are very direct in that way as well. So, and I think also coming back to the whole cycling thing is that, yeah, we like to cycle. It doesn't matter if you are very rich or very poor. Everyone cycles. It's there. We've got the infrastructure for it. I also think it's a way. I think maybe in the past, it may be because we were savers, so maybe it saved us a lot of money by just cycling instead of taking the car. So we are people that really like to also save money, so that maybe that's historically where it's also coming from, is that people like to cycle and everything is also flat.
Now I see a lot of Dutch people are very creative in their own way. Like
Vincent van Gogh is Dutch, right?
Sorry, yeah. Vincent van Gogh. I think we did have a few artists. I don't know how we stand like in terms of statistics here, but I think we were very, for a small country, we've got a very strong presence. First of all, our economy is very well, relatively good. I think
always
a lot better.
Getting better every single year.
Even. Yeah, and we are also, again, going back to the saving, we are savers. So even when the EU and they wanted to bail people out, we were like, no, well, we pay in the EU, but we don't want to give because our deficit is a lot less than anyone else. And this is because we have been saving a lot of money. So I think that's kind of where, that is coming from. And then also, I completely forgot the question, actually.
Your savers.
The best accountant in the Dutch.
Yeah, yeah. And we are just, we are just people that like to count the pennies and... Yeah.
The question that I forgot earlier was Brexit.
Yeah.
What would it like you've been living here for 10 years? Like if the Brexit happened with no deal, leaving without no deal, what kind of life shifting would happen? Would you have to go back, restart your life again, or would you have to stay here? Or what do you see as a perspective?
I don't know. I mean, it's all in the air. Do you know?
No, I have no clue.
I have no clue either. I mean, I asked for... Well, I've got settlement statements, whatever that means. I don't actually know. But I'm not worried. Even if they would send me back, I'm happily to get a ticket back to Holland on the UK's... on the government's cost. I'm happy to do that.
The government, government pay that and then you tell people
to
leave.
Yeah. Detain me. They can send me back. I mean, I've got no problem of actually doing that. In Holland, I'm sure I can build myself back up there. I've got good education. I've got experience. So I'm not really afraid of... moving to another country, like moving back to my country, if that is what they want, then that's fine. If they don't, so it's just one of them things in Brexit. It's all in the air. I'm actually sick of Brexit. I just let the UK decide whatever they want to decide. I just go by it with the flow, and if they want me, then it's good. If they don't want me, it's fine as well. I don't have, the thing is that I don't go back to a country where I feel like there may be no job, so I have to go to a job where there is nothing there. So I don't feel like that. So no, let's see. Maybe Brexit. Yeah, maybe I have to leave all my stuff here. But I'm happy to do that if they pay for my ticket.
Well, only if they pay for
it. If they don't pay for my ticket as well.
You're not leaving.
I'm not really fast. But I also don't want to think about it too much of what happens with Brexit, because we haven't left the EU yet. I'm also traveling, so I will just see what happens when I have to go back, mm-hmm. if I'm able to get back. I'm not gonna put too much energy in it at the moment. I just see it when it comes to the 31st of December, what I'm not able to do. So yeah,
I don't even know what's gonna happen. They're just been saying like they'll be leaving without no deal because of the duty.
Yeah, that has been decided. So yeah.
Brexit is like the one of the main reasons why I don't follow politics. It's a bunch of bullshit.
Because it's also like the whole reason why they say, oh yeah, all the foreigners take our job. Well, you don't even want to work during lockdown where nobody has a job.
Even now.
Lockdown.
Yeah, I just want to chill and then don't do anything and then watch movie. There's a lot of people like that who's in the same boat.
Furlough, yes, me. So no, I'm not... I just see whatever happens. You know, they say that they're leaving with no deal. It's also a question if they're leaving with no deal. So let's see.
See the furlough thing, yeah? I just thought about something crazy. You know when you watch movies and like time travel movies, whatever, and they say, oh, once you get like the first taste of blood, you become a killer.
Yeah.
And once you kill your first person, you start killing everyone, whatever. You get that first taste. I feel like the same similar to that with furlough. Now that people got that taste of furlough lifestyle, they're like, oh,
they want more.
Dedicate their whole life to just living on furlough. Yeah. So now no one's going to work.
Who wants to go for me?
Is the best way to say it, because the society want people to stay at home, do it from work.
I think what people don't get is that furlough, it's not like free money.
Yeah.
It's not free money. We will pay back all that money that the government is borrowing.
That tax, right?
Then don't complain about, oh, the tax is going from 21% or how much is it? 21% to 24%.
I never took a furlough. I'm trying to live with what I can and work hard.
You're paying tax and then the tax is going back to you. It's one stupid cycle.
It's just paying yourself. So I even like benefits, I'm also not... In between my uni, finishing uni and finding a job, I was like 3 months of no job.
Mm-hmm.
And even then I wasn't like, oh, let me go and get some benefits. Just because I had enough savings. Well, I could live from a very small, like, salary. Well, not salary, but like mom was helping me a bit. So I was just trying to live with that. And then as soon as I found a job, I took any job. Like, I'm also not someone that is very, you know, even though I've got like quite a posh upbringing, I'm not someone that is really afraid of doing things that are like maybe below my pay grade, but whatever that means.
You're basically saying you will take any job if I have to work.
I actually, when I didn't have a job for a long time, I started working for not long time, I mean it was only 3 months, but I worked as a Christmas stamp in Harvey Nichols in the basement. I was just doing all the
warehouse stuff.
I did it in
Harris a couple of years ago. Christmas stamp. Yeah. It was an amazing job.
It wasn't good. I had so much fun, all the people were nice, and then very quickly I got kind of upgraded into working in the shop itself. So
it's a cover. It's modern slavery, but yeah.
Yeah, but also I feel like...
Everyone have to do little thing by little things to get where they need to be.
Yeah, and you sometimes have to do whatever you need to do to kind of get around. So that's what
It reminds me of this thing I was watching. They were talking about like their experience in school and whatnot. And you know how you have teachers, you have like the main teacher, then you have the assistant teacher or the TA. And as kids, we used to look at a TA like, oh, you're not a full teacher. You're only half a teacher. But now that you grow up, be like, yeah, I understand. If I was in that position, I don't want to have the responsibilities of having a TA is okay for me. So kind of like the whole thing of, oh, not everyone wants to be a CEO. I'm okay with just doing that little job down the side, just get my money, not being a millionaire, but at the same time, not being absolutely broke. It's like, I'm comfortable with this little amount of job work that I have.
Of course. You need to learn to survive. Even for me, like, especially in London, how expensive in London is.
Yeah, as we know,
the bills are very expensive. Everything.
But I also feel that, I've learned how to budget. My budgeting skills are very...
Like a true Dutch woman.
I'm like, I've got a spreadsheet.
So how do you, like, if people want to learn budgeting for younger self?
Yeah.
If you're able to go back 10 years. Let me ask the question.
Yeah.
So if you have to go back to your time.
Yeah.
And younger you, what would you teach her? Like how to budget?
I've always been very good with money. Like, I'm well known in my family for being someone just that doesn't... When I was little and somebody would give me £2, I wouldn't even spend a penny on someone else. Okay. I would pick all that money. If I find money on the floor, this and that, I will put it all in my saving bank. And I would know, like, if my mom would take out £4 or something, I would know, like, every single penny that was in that saving pot. So for me, like, I don't really know, like, I've always been very good in saving. I've always been, I've always had, like, saving banks, like, or piggy banks that I used to save, even the little 20p's, you know, I would save it. And at some point, when I was in my teens, I had, like, £10,000 on my bank account. And it wasn't...
That's crazy.
To be fair, like, I got mom money from my dad, stepdad, then for my mom. And then what I would do is that they would say, oh, yeah, go and buy yourself a nice lunch for, they will give me £15. I will pay something. I wouldn't even get anything.
So if you can...
There's rice at home.
Yeah, there's rice at home. Like, if you can teach, like, there are probably a lot younger people listening right now. If you can give 3 tips to younger people on budgeting, on like how to survive, like, what would it be your 3 tips or 3 or 4 tips or whatever?
Okay, never get a credit card. Period. Never ever get a credit card. It doesn't work. If you don't know how to manage it, do not get a credit card. People think that credit card is like free money. You have to pay it back, and the rent, the interest on the credit card is even more than what you actually paid for. So you don't save anything.
Mm-hmm.
So do not get a credit card. Open different bank accounts, different savings accounts. So for example, even now, what I do now, even though I don't have a massive salary, my wages are not great. But, well, actually, not bad. I've got different bank accounts. So, for example, what I do is that for one bank account that I know, okay, I want a pair of shoes or I want a nice Dior bag or something like that. I want to save for that. So let's say I've got my salary is like £500, but then my £500 salary buys £100 is my rent and £200 are my £100 is my bill, and I've got £300 left. I will put £100 in one saving account, which is like the one that I use for just spending, going out. Then the other £100 that goes to like a midterm saving, also a pair of shoes or whatever nice bag. And then I've got a third saving account that I use as a saving account that is either for my house or for anything else that I want to, my long-term saving goal. So I kind of set myself goals in terms of, okay, where I want to be. And then the third thing is that if you have a job, I would always ask for a pay rise, even though there's no harm in saying I want the pay rise from your employer. I've done it. I do it. And I don't obviously ask for anything ridiculous, but I don't think it does any harm.
What's your success rate on that? Like, how many people have you asked versus how many times they actually worked?
I mean, almost every time.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah. I always, almost good. Every time I do think that asking for a pay rise, you can't do nothing.
And
not ask for a pay rise, you know. So you need to have evidence that
you need to bring more value than
yeah, and the work, like you need to, I've been here for a few times, I haven't got a pay rise for a year, but I've done this and this and this, and I've helped this, and I've been working really hard, you know, I think I'm worthwhile pay rise. And a lot of these employers, if they like you and they want to keep you, they will give you what you want. I'm just hustling here.
I'm just hustling here.
So yeah, I think these three things, well, at least three things are one of the things. And also, coming back to the whole spreadsheet, sorry, this is my last one.
Excel
spreadsheet. I think if you put down what you are spending every single month, you don't have to look at, I don't look at my spreadsheet every month. Yeah, I look at it every 3-4 months. But it kind of evaluates how much you spend on certain things. So one of the things I did is...
I should be doing that.
I'm
going to
put you guys on saying. I'm going to finish, but I'm going to put you on saying as soon as you're speaking. Go on.
One of the things that I, for example, did, I looked at all my expenses that I had over the year, from Waitrose, from Aldi, from Lidl, from everything. I looked at every single receipt that I've got. I put it all in the spreadsheet. And I looked at, okay, how much I spent with each supermarket. And then I looked a bit more in details in terms of, okay, well, I started developing another spreadsheet where I put all my groceries down and I see, okay, well, where do I spend more? And I didn't want to be like the person that is really like, oh, let's really cut there and there. I just looked at it and I'm aware of what I spend each day. So one of the things I did is that I now just shop once a week. Mm-hmm. I do a big shopping that will cover me for the whole week, and whether it's not, it's Waitrose or Whole Foods or a thing, but I make a shopping list that would have everything I want, and I just buy that, and that's my shopping for the week or 1.5 week. And that's it. And that's how I kind of manage, and I'm having a lot of savings, and now I'm like saving up for a deposit. So, you know, it is manageable, but you have to be committed to being able to save. And that, for me, it's a thrill as well.
Have you ever heard of Monzo?
Yeah, I've got Monzo as well. Yeah, I've got, okay. I've got.
No sponsorship, but yeah, Monzo is a part of it.
Listen, obviously, if they can sponsor us, that'd be lit. But
if Monzo is listening to this, sponsor our Airtime Prime, Airtime Prime podcast.
Monzo are amazing when it comes to like saving and analyzing your
spending.
It's
so efficient. But I also got another one that is Yolt, which I Yolt. Yeah,
I think Sterling is good.
Yeah.
This is a great point to end on. And I would like to say very thank you for coming down.
Woo.
So thank you for coming. Give a little thank you. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate for your time.
Okay.
And then this has been very good podcast. And then, if you want to say anything to the camera, you got 1 minute to... where people find you, what you do. Do you want to say?
Well, I mean, I'm very businesslike, so go and add me on LinkedIn.
So she's a LinkedIn person.
No, I mean, I've got Instagram. I think it's Mercedes_earns, but you can add me on Instagram, but otherwise just LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Thank you. And if you're watching this, please subscribe and follow and all the platform, and then we'll see you in next episode, and stay tuned. Thank you very much for listening, and peace.